Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Homeward Path Podcast, the show by MTG dads for MTG parents of all kinds, and anybody else who wants to listen. We're not an exclusive show. It's been a little bit of a weird week, not a wild one, not a crazy one. It's just been odd. We had two standard Grand Prix right before the end of the format, right before it rotates, and we still saw some innovation right there before we get to see a whole brand new standard format, and we still saw some new things. More than that, I'm in the process of helping my best friend buy into a format, so we're gonna go over my process for that. So before I can get to any of that, I got to thank the people that make this show that are responsible for making this show a reality. We have the network at constructedcriticism.com. You can get the professional perspective on high-end constructed and limited play through their flagship shows, Constructed Criticism and Limited Time Only. You can also get the high-end grinder's perspective on the pauper format, which is still, you know, for all the strides it's made in paper, it's still largely a Magic Online format, but you can get the inside scoop on Pauper from Brandon and Lobert on Common Knowledge. So check all that out. There's also streaming content. Mason Clark streams all the time, as does Spencer Howland. So check that out. There's the Wednesday Night Warrior series where Spencer just kind of does basically what I'm doing now. Just a short blurb about something that he's noticed over the week. So check it all out. It's great. It's well worth your time. And if you're listening to this show and you want better content, first of all, I can't blame you. And second of all, check them out. We're also brought to you by inkedgaming.com. And don't worry, there will be a bad pun-filled segue in here somewhere. I'll make it happen. But if you're in the market for accessories, be it play mats, deck boxes, mouse pads, table mats, gaming crates, dice bags, whatever, check them out. You can get custom designs or you can get pre-existing templates that they have in their inventory. And if you use the promo code CCMTG10 at checkout, you get 10% off your order. So do it. Well worth your time. Make it happen. And I finally have my Patreon up and running. And if you would like to donate to the show, it is not by any means mandatory. The show will continue to remain free as long as I am doing it. But if you would like to donate, if you feel for some reason like you are getting an amount of value out of this show that you need to quantify with cash, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. Or if you would like to donate to the network, you can do so at patreon.com/ccmtg. And one of my benefits for patrons is if you are a patron of $5 a month, you gain the benefit of the first two tiers, the first two reward tiers being access to all the decks that I'm playing. If you want them, just send me, you know, what are you playing for whatever format, and I'll just send you the deck list. I don't care. And at $3 a month, if you are needing help with something, in addition to gaining access to all of my deck lists, I will try to help you make yours better. And then at $5 a month, you gain the ability to, with those other two things, I'm going to shout you out on the show. I'm going to shout you out by name because I love you. I never anticipated the show getting far enough to, like, worry about making a Patreon. So for there to be anybody interested in donating more than a couple of cents a month is just incredibly humbling to me. So thank you, Kevin McGrath, for your donation. And I asked Kevin a few questions while I was getting everything set up, because I figure if we're going to do a patron shout out, I want everybody to know how awesome this guy is. So Kevin has been playing Magic since Mirage, although there was a break of a few years after Urza Block, which, as broken as that standard format is, I can't say I blame you. You know, for all the people who complain about a standard format where we saw Attune with Aether and Rogue Refiner and Ramen Up Ruins and Rampaging Ferocidon banned, and even Aetherworks Marvel and Felidar Guardian, like, all those were cards that, at least most of those were cards that were worthy of the bans that they got. There's never been a standard format more broken than Urza Block, where games would routinely try to end on the first turn. Like, it's really hard to top that. His favorite card is Dacon Blackblade. And his favorite deck type, he said, I like Death and Taxes and Legacy. I've fallen in love with it, but I'm a combo player at heart. Now, somebody who cut his standard teeth playing Heartbeat Harvest in Ravnica Kamigawa 9th Edition Standard, but has since evolved to kind of really enjoy playing and building mid-range decks, I can respect being a combo player at heart. I just can't execute combo decks anymore. I just can't do it. I never feel comfortable without the ability to play interaction anymore. I keep trying every now and then, but it just never works out well. So thank you again, Kevin. Your donation is greatly appreciated. And Spencer and I will get together and work out what kind of Patreon goals we would like to do for this show, because I genuinely have no idea right now. You know, what I would like to do with the donations. Right now, it's just kind of trying to build a little bit of stock so that I can figure out what we can do to improve the show. First on my list would be improving equipment, because I'm currently recording this on a PlayStation 4 microphone plugged into my phone as I'm driving down the road. So upgrading equipment's kind of a thing that needs to happen. Anyway, moving on. We had two Grand Prix this past weekend, one in Orlando and one in Brussels. And in both of them, we saw a little bit of a if you only look at the top eights, which please don't do that to yourself, but if you only look at the top eights, you see, you would believe the whole story is that Red Black and Turbo Fog fell completely off the map and they're bad decks now and everybody needs to play control. Don't do that. Don't be that guy. Look a little deeper. Because the top 32 lists, or at least the top 30 lists for both tournaments, are published. There's a lot of Red Black and a fair amount of Turbo Fog that just missed top 8 cuts. So those decks are still out and out in force. So don't think they are dead because because they didn't break through and win the tournament. What happened is, like Turbo Fog was at Pro Tour 25th anniversary, Esper Control was a fantastic metagame deck on the other side of Turbo Fog's breakout. Because Turbo Fog had a little bit of an effect on the standard format where it moved players more toward non-creature threats as ways to win the game. And what I mean by that is, Planeswalkers don't care how many fogs you're playing. Nexus of Fate has broken out as a standard staple card. It's just a really, really good card. Well, being a deck full of efficient threats and creature removal does not line up great against a deck full of non-creature answers or a deck full of non-creature threats. So we've seen standard iterate a little bit more. And Esper Control broke out over the weekend in Brussels in large part because it had the ability to tailor for both the top end of these aggro decks using efficient black removal spells to keep from falling too far behind on the board, but also using counter magic to keep your haymakers away. And nobody personified that approach to building the deck like Guillaume Wafotapa, who, if anybody knows me that's listening to this show, knows I love Guillaume Wafotapa. He's one of my favorite players ever. Because nobody personifies mastery of an archetype, in Wafo's case, blue control, quite like him. The only person that comes close is Reed Duke with green midrange in my eyes, and Matt Nass with specifically Kurt Clan Ironworks. But aside from that, it's difficult to quantify just how much Guillaume's mastery over the deck had to do with his design choices. Because Guillaume over the years has been a guy that can play 14 counterspells, even when control is largely considered unplayable, and he can still manage a cash finish. That's just what he does. He just plays a bunch of counterspells, a bunch of card draw, a little bit of spot removal, and somehow just beats you. Wafo is the man. And we got to see it on display again this weekend in Brussels. It's just a master. That's all there is to it. But moreover, the deck, being a deck that focuses more on permission gives you a tempo advantage against all these decks that are trying to tap out for fives or tap out for sevens or tap out for whatever. If your opponent is interested in trying to tap out to kill you a little bit faster, having Essence Scatter, Negate, Syncopate, Disallow is going to make you beat them. Being able to keep them from playing these top-end haymakers, because a lot of these decks are sacrificing their early game in order to line up better against the other decks in the format in the middle of the game. And if you can line yourself up in a position where you can neutralize their limited early game and then just counter your 4-drop, counter your 5-drop draw a card, counter your 6-drop draw a card, counter your extra 5-drop draw a card, you're going to win. Your opponent eventually runs out of steam. You've still got a handful of cards, and you can land a Teferi with counter back up or Escanta up or just on an empty board and win the game. You can run away and hide. So it was kind of a revelation for me. Well, not a revelation, almost a vindication for me, because I have loved blue-black control in Standard for a long time. And getting to see it break out splashing exactly Teferi was a big deal for me. Like, it was exactly the kind of list that I had in mind, even though I never put pen to paper to write it down. It was exactly what I wanted to see out of that archetype. So that was exciting for me. And then the other deck that I was really excited about was the Sultai Gift deck from GP Brussels as well. Now, before I dive too far into that, there was also, of course, there was a deck that they dubbed Mostly Red Aggro, which I think is the best possible approach to take to mono-red or black-red, is to just be as low to the ground and fast as you can possibly be in the face of Turbo Fog. Bash them down to about 9 before they get all the fogs online, or before they start being interested in trying to cast Teferi and Nexus of Fate, and you can just kill them with top deck Lightning Strikes and Shocks and Wizard's Lightnings. So, that's a good place to be if you're interested in trying to beat Turbo Fog. Just kill them. Just make them have the fogs. Make them have all of the fogs, because they're not playing removal. Anyway, the Sultai Gift deck from the top 8 of Grand Prix Brussels looks to me like a lens into what we might be able to build on the other side of the rotation. I was talking about green-black midrange last week as a possible deck shell for post-rotation Standard. It's the one I'm the most interested in. And the Sultai Gift deck to me really showed off why. Because the cards they're splashing blue for, because let's be real, this is a green-black Gate to the Afterlife deck splashing Champion of Wits and Minister of Inquiries. That's basically it. That's all you really want out of blue in that deck anyway. Maybe sideboarded negates. But splashing those two cards both rotate. As does, obviously, the Gate to the Afterlife, God Pharaoh's Gift engine. But what we saw was a graveyard synergy deck, which was exactly what I was talking about being potentially good on the other side of the rotation. We see Stitcher Supplier linking arms with Merfolk Branchwalker, Jade Light Ranger. Exactly what I was talking about. And it was really cool to see this version of it because they didn't go all in on something like Angel of Invention or Combat Celebrant. Now, I liked the Combat Celebrant build because of the ability to just actually kill your opponent if they didn't have graveyard interaction. You know, it was a very meaningful thing to be able to just gain a bunch of combat phases and your opponent's dead. But more than that, there was more to like about it, about this version in a format where Turbo Fog is a player, where control is starting to come back into the format really hard. And that is, by loading your graveyard with these cards, with the Explore creatures, with Stitcher Supplier, you not only help turn on Gate to the Afterlife, but you also help fuel the God Pharaoh's Gift, both initially, but even after it's online and has gone for a couple of turns. If your opponent wipes your board twice after you got Pharaoh's Gift on the table, you know, even if your opponent just exiles your creatures somehow magically, you know, Teferi tucks the 4/4s, whatever. Teferi tucks the creatures that are on the board. If you can reanimate an explore creature, you can potentially load up to you can load up next turn, or you can load up two turns depending on which creature you hit. Or if you God Pharaoh's Gift back a Stitcher Supplier, you load up potentially up to three turns worth of creatures in your graveyard. So instead of being all in on trying to just make this one singularly large threat, the Sultai Gift deck was more interested in being this progressive value mid-range deck. And that was really exciting to see, because that's the kind of deck I have in mind for post-rotation, this progressive value-oriented graveyard synergy mid-range deck. So that was really cool for me. I really like to see that. Now, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't remind you that Goblin Chain Whirler is still a card in Standard. There's still a lot of cards that are going to be on the other side of the rotation that are going to make for good decks, good strategies, all the above. Whatever. And Standard right here before rotation, I mean, it's not going to change a ton between now and the end of next month. We may see a couple of decks show up a little bit, but for me at least, the investment's not worth it, so I'm not particularly interested, except that it was really cool to watch. So that's my wrap up for the Grand Prix. The short version is the top two decks are still the top two decks. Arguably the top three decks are still the top three decks, although Stompy has largely fallen off a cliff because of how bad it is against Turbo Fog. We still have a lot of black red. We have a fair amount of Turbo Fog. Stompy is still fine. But the presence of Turbo Fog has created a hole in the format that Control got to come back and start to fill. And I mean, that's basically going to be the format until rotation is, in my eyes. There may be different cast members, but it's still going to be red aggro versus not red aggro versus Turbo Fog versus Control. That's kind of what things look like to me from now until the rotation. Although Grixis Midrange is still a deck. It's stuffed full of good cards. It's going to be fine. Bolas is a gross card. We still have Scarab God and Glorybringer for a few more weeks. So if you have those cards and you haven't gotten out of them yet in anticipation of rotation, jam them, have a good time. That's what the last few weeks of Standard are about anyway. So, moving on, my best friend Brett came down this weekend under somber consequences. His uncle had passed away, and he came down for the funeral. But he took an opportunity to visit while he was down, and we're going to get him into Modern. He decided that was going to happen. He's financing the move by trading in cards because we're both MTG dads. Him a much newer one with a mortgage payment to make. So, you know, his child is still in diapers. His child is very, very small, needs constant attention. So Brett just does not have time, does not have money to be able to just drop $1,000 and test a Modern deck until, you know, he gets it perfect. We don't have it. We can't do it. But it got me thinking when we were talking about it, and it got me thinking about my process for buying into a format. It's the one that I used when I bought into Standard when I came back to the game, and it's the one that I used when I bought into Modern a few months ago in anticipation of the 1K. There is a process that can be done on a budget that will give you the possibility to succeed in a format. First and foremost, you have to identify your budget. Whether that means saving money, whether that means trying to, you know, work a little extra overtime, get a little extra on your paycheck so that after you pay your bills, you get a little bit of money left over. Whether that means doing what Brett and I did, which is trading in cards and getting store credit. Whatever you got to do, do that first. Make sure you know how much you have to spend. It takes an honest evaluation. If you're doing like Brett and I did, you have to evaluate your collection through the lens of, am I ever going to play this card? Am I going to play this card before it rotates if it's a Standard card? If it's a Modern card, am I going to be able to get the other cards that make this card good? Like, you have to really strongly evaluate everything and then be honest with yourself about what your capabilities are, what your reasonable likelihood of success is, and then go at it from that angle. Trade in what you can't use, what won't help you. Identify what your budget is. For me, buying into Modern, it was about $400 after I traded in a bunch of cards. For Brett, it's going to be about $157. So there's not a lot to spend in either case when you think about a format that features a median average of something like $600 a deck. When you're talking about the upper tier. But the fact of the matter is, the next step is the next most important. Once you identify what your budget is, because you've got to stick to it. It's not like you can just, I mean, you can put it on a credit card or you can take a loan out. I just would definitely not recommend making that kind of a decision. It's an investment on some level, yeah, sure, but it's not an investment you're guaranteed to get a return on. So if you can, you need to do it in a way that minimizes your risk. And trading in cards is a really good way to do that because you spend exactly the shipping to trade the cards in. So that's the first step. Make sure you're on your budget. The second step is to identify both the format you want to buy into, the viable decks in that format, in other words, what everybody's playing. And then through that lens, after figuring out what the format is, you know, standard, modern, pauper, legacy, whatever, what everybody's playing, try to find a space within that format that you can buy into on your budget. You can build in a functional manner. In other words, you can build it where it's a deck that's going to function. And then figure, you know, try to lay out the list, price it out, make sure it's going to fit into your budget. In my case, that ended up for standard, when I first bought in, it was red, white vehicles. And then when right about the time those cards spiked, I set off to do it again because I had a feeling something was going to happen, either a major archetypical shift in standard or, and I'm fairly certain I just made up a word, sorry, English majors. But, a big shift in the archetypes that were being played or even going as far as a standard banning. I could not have anticipated that correctly, but I just had a feeling the cards were going to steadily become worse over time. And so I did it again there. But even like when I bought into Modern, I identified for standard, I identified I wanted red, white vehicles when I first bought in because I wanted an aggro deck. When I sold out and then bought in again, and right before Aether Revolt, or right around Aether Revolt, I got into Jeskai Control with Saheeli and Felidar Guardian, but more than that, just a functional like blue-red control shell that was splashing enough white for Felidar Guardian. That's what I got into. And I played that forever. And then for Modern, I got into Mardu Pyromancer because, for me, I play fair magic better than I do unfair magic. It's just the way I've always been. I always seem to play better interactive magic than I do magic where I ignore what my opponent's doing. The only combo deck I've ever had success with was Heartbeat Harvest and Standard. That's the only one. You could argue I had the success with Saheeli Felidar Guardian, but that was a control deck that happened to kill you on turn 6 sometimes. It wasn't really a combo deck. It was a control deck that had a combo in it. That's why it was good for me. But moving, you've got to identify both where you stand as a player to better identify what kind of archetype you can get into, but also where the format is. If you're interested in interactive magic like me, you need to make sure you play a deck that gives you a chance to win if you're playing it correctly. And that's where we ended up with Brett. That's how we ended up on Abzan Rites. Because not only is being a black-based mid-range deck feasible in Modern, it's fairly good right now on the basis of hand disruption, and then you find some kind of a clock and you just make your opponent have it. Sometimes they do, a lot of the times they don't. But more than that, we ended up on that because Brett's local metagame is much more fair than mine. And as such, he couldn't afford to buy into Mardu Pyromancer And he's not super fond of the deck to begin with. It's just not a style of play that he likes. Brett likes big splashy card effects. So if we're going to build him a mid-range deck, he needs one that's got a little bit of spice to it. He needs one that's got a little bit of kind of the sledgehammer in the mid-game. Slam the door shut, so to speak. So we ended up on Abzan Rites for that reason, too. Functionally, it's a black-green mid-range deck. It's got Inquisitions. It's got, Abrupt Decays, Maelstrom Pulses, if we end up getting them. Probably not yet, but, you know, that's a card that could be in the deck. Thoughtseize. What's the card's name? I'm blanking. Collective Brutality. You know, all of these trappings of classic black-green mid-range. We may end up working Grimflayer into the deck because I feel like it'd be a really good fit. But outside of that, it's also got this little bit of graveyard synergy with cards like Unburial Rites and Lingering Souls giving you your payoffs for white mana. And then in the original list from Saffron Olive, we were playing Siege Rhino and Restoration Angel as this kind of mid-game inevitability where you can make it really hard for your opponent to beat you by attacking by just kind of invalidating one of their creatures or at least softening up one of their creatures with the Siege Rhino life gain triggers while putting creatures on your board that progress your ability to race. Like, it's a deck that races really well through mid-game scenarios. So there's a lot to like about it. It also just plays out of its graveyard in a style similar to Mardu Pyromancer, but maybe not as all-in. Instead of having to maintain a graveyard full of instants and sorceries to fuel a Bedlam Reveler, it just wants to get a couple of cards into its graveyard to start the process. You know, Unburial Rites into Siege Rhino is pretty good. Unburial Rites into Ashen Rider feels like cheating sometimes. You just exile their best thing, and if they kill it, you do it again. So that's a cool thing that you get to exploit. You almost never want to hard cast the sixes. You can, you just don't want to. But that's the space we ended up in for him. And then the third step for buying into a format after you figured out your deck, or after you figured out your budget, after you figured out your deck, get it and play the crap out of it. That's what you got to do. Because if you're going to get a return on the investment, you've got to play it. You can't just sit on it. Sometimes you know your cards will spike, but you have to operate under the premise that they won't. You have to believe that they won't. You have to play it. You have to try to extract value out of it by winning matches of Magic. And even if you aren't winning matches, you're playing matches, and that gives you experience, which makes your next attempt to buy in maybe more fruitful. So whether you're succeeding or not, even if you're not, you're learning. You either win or you learn. So that's really all there is to my process for buying into a format. Find the deck that you're good. Identify your budget. Figure out the deck you're going to play. Get it and play it. If it doesn't work, if it ends up after a reasonable amount of time, not like your first three games or anything, after a reasonable amount of time, reasonable amount of games against a lot of different strategies, if it feels like it's not going to work, repeat the process. Identify a budget, get out of the deck you're playing, get into another one, and try again. It's not a process that's ever done. You are constantly doing this as a budget player. It's something that has to happen a lot. So once you get that ironed out, once you figure it out, it becomes easier. And I mean, it's a great way to play on a budget. You can save a lot of money that way. And speaking of saving a lot of money, if you use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout when you order from inkedgaming.com, you can get 10% off your order. And it's well worth it for the stuff that you're getting. There it is. It's a little lazy. I'm sorry, but that's what we got. Anyway, that's going to wrap up this week's episode, guys. Thanks again for listening. Remember, if you want access to better Magic content, check out constructorcriticism.com. The other three shows on the network are really good. They're really good. But Beyond that, you also have, if you want to donate to the show directly, you can check out the patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. There are three tiers of donations, and the highest tier is $5. I don't expect anybody to just throw cash at me. All right? We are nowhere near that good yet. So if you feel like you are getting value out of it, by all means do, but do not feel like you need to. And then that'll bring me to the end of the show. I mean, oh wait, there's my favorite segment. Thought I forgot, didn't you? This week on hashtag MTG Dad Jokes, where you bring all of your worst Magic-related puns. I only had one entry, and it was spoken. It wasn't even out on the Twitterverse, out on social media at all. This week's winner for MTG Dad Joke comes from the lips of your beloved host here, as I'm playing Games of Pauper with my wife, and every time she starts to get a little bit ahead on the board, I seem to draw a very particular card. And she says, okay, what are you going to do? I said, let me ponder it for a minute. Let me ponder it. What did I cast? It was ponder. It was ponder. So, and I said it this morning, actually, and she told me I had to use that for this week's MTG Dad Jokes because she hates it when I do that. So, that's this week's entry. Remember, if you want to get a good laugh and let everybody else laugh at maybe either your expense or your level of clever, you can tweet the show with your favorite bad pun, hopefully Magic related, but even just any good dad joke by a Magic personality. Make it happen with the hashtag MTG Dad Jokes. I like to laugh. I hope you do too. So that's my entry for this week. And that's going to wrap us up completely. Thanks again for listening, guys. I'll catch you next week. Hopefully, I will have something a little bit spicy to talk about for Modern. Until then, have a good one.